Hi, this is Sam. Thanks for joining us for a special episode of The Appleseed. As a production of BYU Radio, supported by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, we invite you to light the world this Christmas season through simple acts of Christ-like service. You can discover ideas at lighttheworld.org. And today we're bringing you a special bonus story about an act of service that made a big difference for a family in real need. This is from another show produced by the Appleseed team called the Christmas Jars podcast. And if you enjoy the episode you're about to hear, you can find the whole series by searching for the Christmas Jars podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Here we go.
Cameron said to me, "Dad, why did they want to give me the money?" And I said, "Well, because you're sick." And he just looked at me and he said, "But I can do this on my own."
Hi, friend. It's Jason Wright. In 2005, I wrote a little novel called Christmas Jars. The book was about a very simple tradition of a family taking a glass jar, filling it with spare change all year long, and then giving that jar away anonymously to someone in need. Over the years, I have heard thousands of stories of people around the world who have given and received Christmas jars in real life. These are stories of real everyday people with real needs who experience real miracles. Today, it is my absolute honor to speak with Matt Birch about his son Cameron and their family's unique and moving Christmas jars experience. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So do you want to talk a little bit about your family, maybe just quickly introduce the players here, and then let's dive into that knock at the door.
Yeah, happy to. So my wife, Krista, and I, we have four kids, Braden, Tyson, Cameron, and Michaela. And Cameron was 4 years old when I heard about Christmas jars. He had so much energy, and he had too much energy sometimes, honestly. It was an adventure coming home from work because he would hide from me with a sword and attack me when I would walk in. Loved all things superheroes, Spider-Man, Batman.
Wore a cape often, right?
Oh, like all the time.
I've seen some of those photos. They're fantastic.
We have photos of him where he's wearing a pirate hat, a Spider-Man shirt, a Superman cape, and a sword with Spider-Man gloves and cowboy boots. That just kind of sums him up. He was full of life and full of energy.
Now, I've heard you talk about the day your world changed forever. Mm-hmm. Are you comfortable sharing how that unfolded?
Sure. So it actually started in December of 2004. He would wake up in the morning with headaches, and no doctor could figure out why. He had strep. He had different things. After a little while in the morning, he would throw up, and then he would be fine for the rest of the day. But it just happened every day, and the headaches were progressively worse, and no one could figure out why. And my wife said, "Something is very wrong. So if he wakes up tomorrow with a headache, we're just going to Primary Children's Hospital, which is a local children's hospital here in Utah." And he woke up with a headache, and it was a Sunday morning. We took him in. The very first test they ran was a CAT scan, and they found the tumor. That was a Sunday morning. We got to the ER about 9 o'clock in the morning. At 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they rolled him into surgery to remove the tumor. That's how fast it all happened. So,
and then coming out of surgery, that initial prognosis was?
They got all of the tumor, and they were very encouraged by that. And they said since we were able to get all the tumor, it had metastasized, and they proceeded with radiation and chemo, just preventative to make sure that it didn't come back.
And how was he? Did he return back to his joyful self?
He absolutely did. He came back happy, and he would smile, and he just wanted to play. And I've joked throughout the years that I don't know what the doctors did while they were performing brain surgery, but they flipped a switch somehow in him. Now he legitimately cared about other people to a different level than I've seen in most people, including 98% of the adults I've ever met with. He truly, and from the very beginning, in every prayer that he would say, every prayer, whether it was the blessing on the food or whatever, please bless all the other kids with cancer. So he recovered a different person, but the same person, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sure. I want to get to some of those demonstrations of how we can help the audience understand. This isn't just a proud dad talking about a boy he loved dearly.
No.
But a witness to some pretty remarkable acts of generosity. You want to talk about that?
Yeah. There are so many. I could, how long do we have?
I could tomorrow. Go, I think we can go until tomorrow.
Okay, well, we'll fit in half of them then. For instance, the 24th of July is a very big celebration here in Utah, and they have a large parade. Cameron 100% on his own came to us, and he said, I want to do a fundraiser for the other kids with cancer at the hospital. I want to sell treats, you know, like a little corner lemonade stand. That's what he, in his four-year-old mind, was envisioning. So we set up a stand on the route of the parade, and we sold water and ice cream sandwiches and soda. We had a little banner that was made up, and it's Cam's Stand for Kids with Cancer, and he was the best salesman in the history of all salesmen. He stood on the table with his little bald head shining in the sun throughout the whole parade, and that was hard for him. I mean, he was going through chemo at this point, so he didn't always feel well. But he stood out there and he was happy, and we raised hundreds of dollars. His idea was to go to Build-A-Bear, make Build-A-Bears, and donate the bears to the kids at Primary Children's that have cancer. And there's a special meaning behind that because his best friend in the whole world was a little stuffed dog. He named him Baby, and Baby went everywhere with him. And so he said, I want everyone to have their own baby. He repeatedly did stuff like that.
So we get into the fall, and he's doing pretty well. Again, this is the fall of 2005.
Mm-hmm. November 18th. Mm-hmm. I'll actually never forget that date. Krista, my wife, called me at work, and she was in tears, and she said, Cameron's cancer has come back. So I rushed up. And they showed us the MRI, and cruelly, the original cancer spot was still 100% cancer-free. But it had come back completely different. Before, it was a tumor the size of a golf ball at the base of his spine. And this was a thin layer of cancer all up and down his spine and over the top of his brain. So they couldn't do surgery. They couldn't do anything. They told us, take him home. And we'll come up with a new round of treatment because what we're doing clearly isn't working. So we were dealing with the reoccurrence of cancer and trying to come up with a new treatment plan. And then in December, we were sitting at home right before Christmas as a family. And there was a knock on the door. There's a difference between a knock, hey, I'm here to visit, and a knock, I'm leaving something and running. And this was clearly a I'm leaving something and running knock. So my two older sons, Braden and Tyson, they recognized that. So they jumped up off the couch and they ran to the door as fast as they could. Because, you know, you want to catch who's ever. Yeah. And they want to see what's at the door.
Yeah, sure.
So they open the door and they say, Dad, come here. They were very confused. And so I get up and I go, and they're sitting on the front porch were two very large, not little canning jars. They were very big jars full of coins. One had only pennies in it, and one had nickels, dimes, quarters, and then there was a roll of cash actually hidden in the middle of that one. And wrapped around the outside of one of the jars was a copy of the book Christmas Jars with a little note from the wonderful people who had done it saying that they'd heard about Cameron's story and they wanted to do something to help him. So they raised this money and they were giving it to us. And here's a copy of this book that describes the tradition of the Christmas jars. that hit me pretty hard. For my family, for my son, someone had read the book, they wanted to help, and this is how they chose to help our family. It was incredibly humbling. I'm unbelievably indebted to them. They changed our lives in ways that they will probably never understand. And it's very special that we don't know who they are, honestly.
Talk to us a little bit about what comes next when you explain to Cam, these are for you, what would you like to do with it? What does your boy, who now you know is not likely to survive this, right. Mm-hmm. What does your boy choose to do?
Well, once again, Cam taught us how how we should live our lives. And he had just turned 5, and he was about to teach me one of the greatest lessons I've ever been taught in my life. It's a greater lesson than anything I ever taught him. We brought the jars in. He sat on the floor, and we counted one coin at a time. It ended up being close to $400. And while we were counting, Cameron said to me, "Dad, why did they want to give me the money?" And I said, "Well, because you're sick, you don't feel well, they want to make it so you can have fun." And he just looked at me and he said, "But I can do this on my own. I want to buy toys for the hospital." He didn't say anything else. They have a playroom in the cancer wing because a lot of times the cancer patients can't go out into the main hospital because of the chemo. So he came up with a list of toys that he wanted to buy to have in the playroom at the hospital. But we didn't have time to go to the store immediately because of his treatment schedules and because he was still doing chemo. And then, unfortunately, in January, so just after Christmas, it progressed pretty quickly. It became clear that we didn't have much time left, and the Christmas jars got put aside.
I know there had been some discussion in the family about what to do with baby, his most prized possession, when he passed, understanding that that day was now a reality.
We were able to bring him home. He was on hospice. We knew that we didn't have much time left. We started to have conversations that you should never, as a parent, ever have to have. But baby was his best friend. So what do we do? Do we bury him with Cameron, or do we keep him as a part of Cameron? We could not decide. This was days and days and days. We probably would have leaned toward burying baby with Cameron. We didn't want to separate them. And then he was on very heavy medication, and the cancer had progressed where he was really paralyzed. He couldn't speak anymore. He hadn't spoken for several days. It was very difficult for him to even move his hands, and he was very heavily medicated, so he was asleep 99% of the time. And we had a rocking chair right next to his little hospital bed in the family room so people could come and visit him and say goodbye to him. So I was sitting in the rocking chair one night, and Cameron had baby under his arm, as he always did. He was trying to say something, but I couldn't understand him. He was whispering. So I stood up so I could lean down next to him, and I said, "What do you need, buddy?" And he tried to say something else, but it just wasn't working very well. And then he, with his hand that really could barely move, pointed to baby, and then he pointed to me. And then he pointed to baby, and he pointed to me. And I couldn't believe it. And then he spoke very clearly for the first time in days. And he said very clearly, "You can keep him." And he picked up Baby, which I don't even understand how he was able to do that, and handed him to me. And wouldn't take him back. He knew on the deepest level, he didn't need Baby anymore. But Mom and Dad and Braden and Tyson and Michaela, we needed Baby. So his last words and lesson that he shared with us was giving us Baby. Cameron never got to go to the store. He passed away in February. A few months after that, we took Cam's list that he wrote down that he came up with, and we went to the store and we bought all of the items on his list and donated them to the hospital specifically for that playroom. And honestly, the social workers at the hospital were kind of used to this at this point because he had donated so many other things to the hospital, but they were blown away. Then a couple of years later, we had some friends that had a child in the hospital. So we went to visit them. And that's the first time we'd been back to the cancer wing since he'd passed away. I had to see the playroom. So I went. And there were all of his toys that he had donated that were spread around the room that the kids were playing with. And there was one in particular that I was looking for because he was so excited about it. It was like his number one thing that he wanted to buy. And it was a little tool set, and I couldn't find it. And it almost bothered me. Like, where is this little tool set that he was so excited about? So I asked a nurse. And she said, "Oh, yeah, we have that. But there's another little boy who is so sick that he can't leave his room, but that's his favorite toy. So his parents took it into him, to his room, so he could play with it." That's the legacy. You pay it forward. And years and years and years later, who knows how many people those little acts, a toy set, will touch and can change their lives.
If you're listening right now and wondering how to make a difference, do something the way Cam did. It doesn't have to look exactly like what Cam did, but look around your community and your family and those that you minister to in a real way and at work and say, "Who can I help today?"
Absolutely. The smallest gesture can have the largest, longest lasting impact on someone's life than you could possibly ever imagine. And that truly is the spirit of Christ and giving and service.
Matt, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For joining us.
It was my pleasure.
I bet Cam is so proud of you and your family.
We're proud of him, that's for sure. We love talking about him whenever we get the chance.
Amen to that.
The Christmas Jars podcast is hosted by Jason Wright and produced by Brian Tanner and Wendy Folsom. Thank you to our guest, Matt Birch, for sharing your story. Our executive producer is Sam Payne, and our audio engineer is Brandon Lewis. If you're looking for more ways to serve others this Christmas season, then the annual Light the World campaign can give you a lot of ideas. Visit lighttheworld.org to learn more. This has been a production of BYU Radio.